When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pod save the Queen!
Hello and welcome to this week's Pod Save the Queen. My name's Zoe, I am your host this week. I'm covering for the lovely Anne Gripper, who is away at the moment. I'm joined as usual by Russell, our Royal Editor.
Hello.
And Amber, our Fashion Director.
Hello.
So we're going to get straight to it because it's been a very busy week and we've got lots to catch up on. We're going to start by talking through the latest news about the Cambridge and the Sussexes, about the split of the Royal Foundation.
Big news.
Yeah, it's been something that's been talked about for a while, isn't it? But we kind of got the official confirmation of what's going to be happening and the logistics of it last week.
Yes, we did. So last week we had the sort of official confirmation that the Royal Foundation that was set up in 2009 by brothers William and Harry as part of sort of their vehicle for their charitable endeavours is to be no more in its current state. So the Cambridges are going to take it on and it will be known as the Royal Foundation of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. But it's long been rumoured that Meghan and Harry wanted to set upon their own path, and obviously they are becoming quite a force on the global stage. And so, you know, whether controversially or not, I think it's probably a good idea because, you know, they are moving in a different direction. There's definitely different things that they can do. Obviously, with Harry being sixth in line to the throne, he's more of a, I mean, I use the term minor royal loosely because he's obviously one of the most popular and major figureheads of the royal family, but seeing as he's sort of down the pecking order, there's definitely a lot more different endeavours that he and Meghan can set upon, not least with sort of the American aspect of things he's doing with Oprah Winfrey, with Apple TV, which is coming up, which I had made a point of saying that. And I do understand that, you know, William is in talks to do something on a conservation level with Netflix as well. But, you know, whether that does come to fruition or not, I think there is definitely a distinction between the two boys and their wives and the families moving forward. So ultimately, I mean, when this was sort of, you know, we had the sort of big Fab Four moment, didn't we, when they had them on the stage. And
yeah, that was the first time they were kind of all pictured together.
And that was about 18
it?
Months ago, wasn't yeah. it? So it was sort of 2017. That was sort of sold as this was going to be the big moment for the Fab Four moving forward. We were going to see them loads doing stuff together. And, you know, reading between the lines, I think the sort of signs were there when they sort of joked about having disagreements or sort of tiffs at the time. And undoubtedly that maybe they can't work together as closely as once was hoped. So it's Fab Four no more.
No.
But they're still fab. We still love them.
Yeah.
But I think it's you know, they're just gonna have to. I mean, they are definitely moving in different directions. I mean, I always say this about the you know, William being prepared for kingship, Prince of Wales first. Obviously, Harry and Meghan are doing massively different projects, and we'll definitely see that in the next few months when you know, we're going on an Africa tour, probably in the autumn, late September, early October, maybe. And with that happening, you're going to see them doing a lot more stuff on a global stage, I would say. And even though, you know, William will probably be doing a lot more, you know, global activities, I think you'll see him taking a more statesman-like role, certainly with this rumoured trip to Asia, the big tour in Asia for the Cambridges in the autumn as well. I think that will be sort of a very post-Brexit, brave new world for Britain. We're open for business, all set upon trade, whereas Harry and Meghan's will be, you know, boots on the ground, grassroots activity. Whether it's sort of landmines in Angola or Santabale's activities in Malawi. I think we're going to see two very, very different sides of their royal duties. But, you know, watch this space. I think it'd be very, very interesting.
Yeah, I think it'd be really good to see kind of how they use those separate platforms to do the things that they're really passionate about. But what will the split mean for the causes that they have worked on together so far, like Heads Together and things like that?
So Heads Together, so we are told, I mean, when we had this big meeting, it was all the sort of royal correspondents and producers of were sort of put on a, what do you call it when you dial in? Oh, it's a conference call, so yeah, brain freeze. So we were all dialed into a big conference call with the Palisades, who were responsible for the Royal Foundation, and obviously their main advisors as well, who sort of announced the split, as it were, formally. But they were at pains to say, you know, they will come together for special events like Heads Together. You know, Heads Together has a huge legacy moving forward. There's definitely sort of different offshoots of the charity happening at the moment. Obviously, William's doing this thing at the moment with the legacy of Heads Together called Heads Up with the FA. And there's definitely going to be sort of activities happening in the future for Harry and Meghan to get involved. So maybe we will see the Fab Four come together. I mean, I don't think it's going to be anytime soon, but there definitely will be opportunities. They've left the door open, shall we say, for it to happen in the future. But in terms of the money that's been raised for the charities at the moment, that will stay within the sort of Royal Foundation boundaries. Invictus Games was sort of a vehicle from the Royal Foundation, but has been set up in its own essentially its own foundation, its own vehicle for like the last sort of 4 years, I think. So that's become a separate entity. And then obviously you'll see whatever the Sussexes call their foundation will take on this huge new path. And I imagine they will be able to court different, you know, sponsors, people to get involved with that might be a bit more difficult for someone like William especially, and Kate, given their roles within the monarchy,
yeah,
to
have
take
more
forward,
freedom, less restriction.
Definitely. So, maybe you will see the Sussexes court the big sort of American corporations, the big billionaires, the big, you know, the big personalities to be able to fundraise essentially to get their foundation off the ground. And I don't think they're going to have too much problems, you know, courting that because they are megastars in their own right. So, whatever it is, it's going to be hugely successful. We're definitely going to see Meghan, you know, whenever she comes back from maternity leave, sort of not only be doing her patronage work in the UK, but she's going to be massively on the global scale doing a lot of stuff with women's empowerment. Girls and education is going to be huge as well. So,
I mean, look at the impact they've had already with regard to fundraising. We've discussed in the past the charities when they've backed them, the huge boost that they've received. I mean, it's
massive.
Going to be amazing.
Yeah. Exactly. People like Oprah, working people like Oprah, that's going to open up a lot of doors. So, so I don't think we'll see any. I was told they hadn't thought of a name yet. So maybe people can tweet us some names that they think. Keep it clean, guys. Yeah. But I think we'll probably see an announcement. So when was Archie born? Archie's April. So I think she, you know, Meghan will probably come back to work around the sort of autumn time. And then once it gets into that, you'll definitely have, there's going to be loads of work behind the scenes. And then we'll probably see a formal announcement probably before she comes back. And then they'll launch it with a big razzmatazz hat to has. Hopefully they'll have a party. I probably won't be invited, to be honest. So.
Oh no, it sounds very exciting. Lots of good things coming up by the sounds of it. So moving on now then to the next kind of big event that was going on, Royal Ascot, which is always a really fun event for obviously the royal family, but for everyone else as well, really. Lots of people go, lots of people get dressed up.
And for me.
Oh yeah,
you I went to
go, didn't you?
I did. Yes.
Showing off. We were all sitting there looking at pictures.
I tweeted a picture of me in a top hat, but some people said I looked like the Artful Dodger because my top hat was pushed too far back. I was worried it was going to fall over my forehead, so I pushed it back. So yeah, I looked like an oik basically when it was a very posh day.
But how was it anyway?
It was good fun. Yeah, it was. It's always a great occasion. Royal Ascot is brilliant. 5 days of amazing racing. You know, loads of amazing outfits. Royal family, all of them were out in force. We didn't see Harry. I thought he would make an appearance.
Yeah, well, I was quite surprised we didn't see him.
But, you know, he's got other things, probably helping out, you know, looking after the babies, being very hands-on, yeah. Probably still having a few sleepless nights. but there was loads of people. Zara, Mike Tyndall were there. There was Beatrice and Eugenie. Prince Charles were there. Duchess of Cornwall, who walked past me.
Oh.
I mean, I had a bit of, you know, a star moment. I was sort of being held back by a police officer at the time, so I couldn't go any further.
You didn't go up for a chat.
Well,
we
were in sort of the inside of the royal enclosure because we were very fortunate this year, and I had been invited with the other royal correspondents to, on behalf of Ascot, basically. And it was a wonderful day. Had a great laugh, and although the weather was awful during the day, it was sort of on and off. Rainy. It was very, very rainy, which sort of put pay to. You know, a few of the favourites in the races, but it's always a good occasion, and I think for royal watchers it's one of the best because you can see, you know, the Queen attends all 5 days. Punters have massive bets on what colour hat she'll be wearing,
yep. Yes,
which is a massive part of Ascot actually, and you know, loads of bets get laid down on that. It's, you know, lots of feverish activity from the bookies, and I had a couple of winners.
Did you?
I had a couple of winners. Yeah, on the first two races, I won. And then I lost it all again. So, you know, you can't win them all, literally. So
I've done Royal Ascot once, and my rule was I bet on horses with Z's in their names, and I won both of them.
There you go.
One must spend.
I just choose the
names.
Great. There's no strategy. There's no logic to it.
Yeah,
choose the
names. Pick a nice name. Yeah.
Well, I chose, I think the first horse was called Raffle Prize, and I'd won a raffle prize the few weeks before, and it came in. I am feeling lucky. Maybe I'll go and go buy a lottery ticket.
I was
going to
say, you're just
know.
Stealing all the good luck now.
You got greedy.
Yes, I did. Well, that's why I lost all the money, because I got greedy as well.
One of my favourite things about Ascot, though, is you get to see, once they've kind of done the carriage riding, you get to see them all chatting, and you get to see them kind of, you know, normally they're very much kind of on show, but you see those almost moments of them all chatting and hugging and having a catch
up. Totally,
which is lovely. And I think Zara in particular just looks so happy, and it was really lovely.
But the Queen always looks really happy at Ascot. She clearly absolutely loves that week.
Yeah, they all just look quite relaxed.
It's a proper unguarded moment that you don't get to see. And, you know, there's that we were talking about earlier about Mike Tyndall. The Queen came up to him. And he's definitely seen as the joker of the pack, isn't he, of the whole family. He takes off his top hat. Queen's staring at him, and he pulls out a little mini top hat inside the hat. I mean, it's laugh a million.
What a joker.
Do you know, it was a little chocolate that he pinched to take home to the kids.
Oh, it was a chocolate hat. Yeah. Oh, it all because
I loved. I also love the image of him kind of just in the, you know, the obviously very important, you know, area where they were all getting ready, and him just kind of going up to one of the tables and just, I'll have one of those.
Yeah.
And like, that can go in my hat. Pinching one of those.
I think they're some of my favourites, the Tyndalls as well. They're pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely my favourites. But yes, so as you mentioned briefly earlier, there's always a lot of bets on the colour that the Queen's going to wear. And for opening day this year, it was a lovely kind of baby blue, wasn't it?
Yeah, almost like a lilac-y blue, actually. But she very much set the tone, actually, for what the rest of the royals wore.
It was like an unofficial dress code, wasn't there, almost, with lots of them in light blue, which was lovely.
Yeah, so Beatrice and Eugenie, they were both wearing kind of the same kind of cornflowery blue colour. And, of course, Kate Middleton wore that amazing dress that everybody
lovely,
got very excited
it?
About. It's probably one of my favourite pictures ever, actually.
Pussy Bow Bingo.
It was Pussy Bow Bingo all the way. And you got the colour spot on
I
as well.
I did. Well, yeah. It wasn't me. I mean, somebody did tell me about it, but I did text Anne the same.
Yeah, you were ticking a lot of boxes that day.
Although most
people said she was wearing a dress, and it's actually a blouse and a skirt. So
was it?
You do need me in the room, because I do bring that extra little bit of information with me, because we all really needed to know that. And she wore an amazing pair of silver and Gian Vito Rossi shoes. She looked absolutely incredible. And there was that lovely moment where her and William were walking along, very unguarded, chatting together. They had their umbrella up because it was raining, and it's got to be my favourite picture ever. It's actually on our Instagram, so if you haven't seen it, do go have a look at it. It's amazing. If you're going to go to Ascot, she's raised the bar for everybody. That's how you go to Ascot. She looked absolutely incredible. Sometimes she does stick to very structured, rigid things. You know, she's a fan of the McQueen, Alexander McQueen dress code, but she just looked more relaxed, I think.
Yeah.
It was floatier, it was softer. Obviously, the pussy bow that we know she's a fan of. Just pop that in there again
and
for
me.
Russell. And you. You're a big fan of that look. She just looked very, very soft and feminine. A fabulous Philip Treacy hat. It all just really came together and she looked amazing. I also, I did really like Beatrice's hat. So she dress. She was wearing a high street dress by Marge. I never know if you say Marge or Maj, but we're going to say Marge today because it sounds slightly more upmarket, which is actually still on sale, and it's actually in the sale. So instead of spending kind of upwards of £400, you could snap it up for £189. Kind of broidery anglais, really beautiful colour, belted dress, and it looked amazing on her. And I thought Eugenie looked really good as well. She's wearing a strapless Calvin Klein, sleeveless Calvin Klein dress with a bright yellow hat. Yes. Everyone looked very fabulous. But it is one of those occasions that everybody really looks forward to. Everybody's kind of on their best game, if you like. And yeah, everyone just looks very happy. It's just a shame that the sun didn't shine a bit.
Yeah, it didn't sort of dampen spirits so much. It was torrential. I went on the Wednesday. It was utterly torrential during the day. So we were sort of taking cover whenever we could. But it's one of the top sort of racing meets, definitely.
And it wouldn't be a British event if we didn't have to worry about the rain.
Exactly.
Yeah, and they all had their umbrellas prepped, didn't you? As you say, kind of William was walking around with his, and they were all well prepared.
Ready. I may have stolen one from Rollins. But it's very fancy. I kind of did
ask. You'll return it next year, won't you?
Yes, I will definitely.
When you say you kind of
I did sort of ask. I said, can I take this?
Got to be honest, after the top hat, I don't think you're going back. Yeah.
That was it really? For you. Who's that toy? Next year.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Oh, wow. So is it kind of branded?
Well, it's branded. It says Royal Ascot. I mean, it's very posh. It's in my car now. But
I was going to say, next time we have a fire alarm at work and we're downstairs outside Canary Wharf, you're going to be showing off.
Yes, it's huge. It's going to fit about 50 people under it. It's massive.
No, that's great. And obviously, so we've just kind of talked about opening day, but they all went, the Queen went every day.
We're going every day,
joined
by
different
members of the family, yeah. So I think loads of them were there on the first day, and then the sort of the Cambridges were there on the first day, I think. And then
I loved the Queen's outfit on the first day. I know we've talked about the fact that it was blue and lots of people bet on it, but she had a really, really amazing Rachel Trevor Morgan hat on with the beautiful flowers around it, and the flowers actually matched exactly the Stuart Parvin dress that she was wearing underneath her coat, and lots of people, you couldn't really see that because she was in the carriage.
Yeah, because I completely missed this.
Yeah, when she was walking around, it did look really, really amazing. So top marks to Rachel, because I think that's one of my favourite hats ever.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. So moving on now to the, there was a report that came out at the start of this week, which gave some kind of insight and official details of the spending of members of the royal family. It's caused there has been a bit of confusion with people kind of wondering what this grant exactly is. So can you just, Russell, just explain roughly what this is?
Yes. I mean, I will try and keep us all awake. Yes. So, I mean, it's always a big sort of moment for the media to get involved in this. And it's obviously once a year, the accounts of the royal family get published, not in their entirety, but they're fairly transparent in terms of, it's called the sovereign grant. And essentially the best way to describe it is that the money earned by the crown in terms of the crown estate is collected, and then that is collected by the treasury, and then essentially the treasury, the government, give the royal family a rebate so they can exist for their expenses for the year, for the entire royal family. Prince Charles is separate to that, and obviously are the boys and their families as well, because Prince Charles, as the heir to the throne, exists on money from the Duchy of Cornwall, which is basically a load. It's a lot of land that earns money throughout the country, and I think it earns about 21 million quid. And so he then gives money to run his household and run the households of the Cambridges and the Sussexes as well. But in terms of the others, royal family, the sovereign grant, we give them, I think it earned probably, in rough terms, about £350 million, and we give back about 15% of that normally. But over the next 10 years, we are giving back 25%. I think that's right. I've just gone... just lost my figures. Anyway, we are giving a lot more money because of the resurfacing of Buckingham Palace, which is, over the next 10 years, going to be about £365 million to configure it to replace some of the boilers, all the old pipes. It's having a massive renovation project over the next 10 years. So essentially what it boils down to is how much do the royal family cost each and every one of us in the UK? And the figure normally works out at about sort of 70p, but because of this new resurfacing work, it works out £1.24 for all of us. So half the price of a high street cup of coffee, however, which doesn't seem like too bad value. However, when you start looking at the figures, there's an awful lot of money spent on the tours, on private jets, on the Royal Train, which is very, very controversial. This Royal Train has been going for decades, probably should have been taken out of service decades ago, because it's sort of, it's like a 1970s carriage. It's all still really, really old, and the Queen loves to travel on it and travel to certain places and probably get a helicopter or a private jet back. So, for example, when Meghan and the Queen went on one of their... it was when Meghan's first job with the Queen to Chester, that job came in at £29,000, which is an awful lot of money just to go. You know, a normal ticket would probably cost you about 80 quid.
I think it cost me that to go to Manchester the other day.
What, 29 grand? Yeah. Probably.
Yeah, I think it did.
It probably took as long as a Royal Train did as well. Because, like, normally they travel up overnight, and the argument is that it's a preferred mode of transport. It's secure, it can stop anywhere. It's obviously the Queen likes to travel in on it. It's a big occasion when it rolls into town, and for the, you know, when it came into the Northwest, there was lots of people gathered there to watch it. But the sort of controversies lie in sort of Prince Charles spending, you know, 10, 20, 30, well, it's always over £15,000 when you look at the sort of travel. So for those private jet trips, when he's travelling up to Aberdeenshire and it's costing sort of £19,000 and he's only going for the weekend and then getting the train back down to London, that costs £20,000, there are certain issues that people take with that.
There are some savings that could be made.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And one of the big trips that they had was to, you know, the Caribbean and Cuba, which was, you know, this big historic tour. To Cuba, cost of eye-watering £417,000. So I think, you know, there are certain issues with it. However, when it boils down to it, we probably do get quite good value for money. They work pretty hard.
I'm more surprised by how much they do. I mean, earn is kind of the wrong word.
Of how much
the,
you bring
the
in.
The wealth, the revenue that it generates having a royal family. And just by default, by what they own and the land that they have. I'm more surprised by how much they do actually make.
Well, I think when you look at the sort of money, they own most of Regent Street. Yeah. They, you know, it's all major, major, huge property portfolio all throughout the country, especially in the City of London, which, you know, that brings in huge, huge revenue. So, yeah, then you have the argument of the Duchy of Cornwall and whether Prince Charles's wealth is actually inherited wealth, and whether, you know, we could be going back hundreds of years to see how this wealth is actually inherited. And I'm no historian, but I think once you start scratching the surface, there's several arguments to be made. But one of the major things to come out with it, which has been hit with controversy, even though we had been talking about how much this project was going to cost, is the actual cost of Frogmore Cottage. Yes. And that's come in at £2.4 million so far, because it's still not finished. So they've not finished the exterior of the building.
They're still having a mare with those builders, aren't
I
they?
I think they are. Yeah, surprisingly, they'd say, you know, I'll have to get my granny to come down and sort of whip me into shape. But it is an eye-watering sum of money. It is, you know, Frogmore Cottage is a very grand Grade Two listed building. It's in part of the Royal Collection, essentially the Royal Palace's portfolio, and it had been earmarked for redevelopment, but there's not many sort of 30-somethings can afford to, you know, even put deposits on a house at the moment. And I think that's when they're Harry and Meghan are being gifted a property.
Yeah, but then look at the money they're making through charity.
Well, it's yet to be seen, isn't it? And I'm sure they will. But, you know, and we had this, you know, this controversy when the Cambridge's apartment in Kensington Palace, where 1A was being done up, and that came in at like £4.5 million. So it's an
actually,
awful
they
lot.
Harry and Meghan have done it on the cheap.
They have done it on the cheap. Well, I think they've got 5 bedrooms, and I think one day's got 20 or something. But listen, it is an eye-watering sum. We are in especially austere times in Britain, and I think that when the story came out today that they've actually contributed £250,000 to that cost on top of the £2.4 million that's been spent. However, they are millionaires in their own right, and I don't. It doesn't really sit well with me, to be honest, because I think that they do need a place to live. They represent the royal family. They represent all of us when abroad. They are hugely popular all throughout the world. However, again, they're both millionaires in their own right. Obviously, Harry's wealth comes from the Duchy of Cornwall, and Prince Charles is a fabulously wealthy man. So I'm not too sure why the taxpayer should have been footing a bill which will definitely run into about £3 million, because
it's a building of a historical significance.
It is, but now it's become their home. So if it is to be their home, it's very different to Windsor Castle and Buckingham Palace that is open to the public and generates revenue by doing that.
This is just
I'm not saying that we shouldn't have made a contribution. They represent us. They are our royal family, and again. One of the arguments is that it's essentially a rebate from money earned from the royal family. So, it's fraught with problems, and we could be here all day or all week talking about it. But I just think there are. We ran a poll in the paper this week about, and it was overwhelmingly people saying that they should have been paying for it for themselves, and they didn't agree with it. And I think people are feeling the pinch at the moment, aren't they? Everyone's feeling it. Probably all throughout. Britain and the world. It's a controversial subject. I'm sure many people will let me know their feelings on Twitter, as they have been all week.
I'm just shocked it's not finished.
No, it's still not finished. Apparently, they're allowed a certain amount of fixtures and fittings, as in, we will give you this kitchen from Wix or whatever. And they say no. And then B&Q, I think, they plumbed for. But then they'll probably say, well, no, we wanted Vicky Charles to do our interior designing, and she's recommended that we have this very, very...
She hasn't gone for Wix.
No, she didn't. No, she might have a deal.
I'm just really shocked by that, yeah. So then would they pay the kind of...
I imagine they've paid Vicky Charles's fee, and then they would obviously pay for the fixtures and fittings within the actual house. £2.4 million to sort of change a building. I don't know. I mean, I thought it was five separate dwellings and they've put it into one. There was an awful lot of structural work that needed to be done. It still seems like an awful lot of money to me, but, it's a good discussion. Good topic.
And were there any other kind of interesting things that came out of the report?
Of the grant? Yeah, I mean, basically, Prince Charles is obviously taking on a lot more duties now because of the Queen stepping back from, certain definitely foreign travel. And obviously, this big trip to Cuba and the Caribbean was massively expensive. However, on the flip side, it was, over 70 engagements over 11 days. Whenever they do go away, they do work very, very hard. And I didn't go on that tour, but I can definitely say that is the case for Harry and Meghan, because we were there for 3 weeks and it was non-stop. I mean, I think that over 17 days of engagement, they didn't have a day off and she was pregnant, And I think, a huge respect to any pregnant woman who works through a pregnancy. It's super, super tough. And she was out there every day on boats and in the heat and stuff. And they do work hard. I mean, I'm not knocking them for doing that. I think there could be a different arrangement of the finances potentially.
Do you think it ever will change? Because this comes up every year.
Yeah,
everybody
it does.
Again,
we've had the same old stories every year. The Royal Train costs £20,000. It's actually gone up.
Next year we'll probably be discussing it again.
Exactly, of course we will. Mm. And we will be discussing why on earth the Duke of York, who's been dubbed Air Miles Andy in the past, is taking private jets to, he got, I think it was 20-odd thousand pounds to go to Budapest.
Yeah, but
and
it's
Aberdeen
all on Air Miles, it's fine.
Of course, yeah.
the point.
And then, why should we be paying that for, again, another minor member of the royal family that isn't doing, I've never been to a Duke of York engagement. I don't think he does very many, but his argument would be that he's a sort of this business czar for Britain, and he's out there, helping us to... water the paths of Brexit. But you know, that remains to be seen. That's another controversy.
Trying to see if there's an event you can go to. We need to know more about this.
Of him? Yeah, yeah, I know. Yeah, what are you actually doing? Can I come on the jet? I mean, yeah,
I'd really like
then
to
I might not be complaining. So yeah, there are obvious costs involved, aren't there? And you know, I do understand that the argument is if it costs us all £1.24 from our taxes, then you know, we should probably just put up with it.
But I'm happy with the one.
Yeah, I think, you know, overall, it's not a bad investment or return on our investment, is it?
Prince Charles, they make very nice biscuits.
Gosh, can you hear my stomach rumbling?
So I said the word biscuits,
so sorry.
Actually. Just mention of biscuits. And
I know, yeah, it set me off.
And one thing that was missing from that report, though, was the, obviously, Second Royal Wedding. In
yes.
October. Why was that?
So,
on there?
Again, that was quite controversial, actually, because I did think we would actually get a bit more of a breakdown about the wedding. And there are certain. So, the reasoning behind it was that it was a private occasion. Not only. So, the taxpayer would have footed the bill for the security on the day. And, you know, I don't think we've ever reached the conclusion of how much that cost. There was. Details about, you know, £30 million security costs for the whole weekend. Obviously, the specialist officers were involved, Secret Service, all the sort of firearms officers that were obviously on hand during the whole weekend. However, because it was deemed a private event and not a state occasion, we didn't get a breakdown of how much it cost. So. Prince Charles actually met the cost of that, and there was certain, you know, it depends which way you look at the accounts, and they can be interpreted differently, but there was definitely extra costs from last year, shall we say, that from the year before, that one could potentially, you know, put on the fact that the wedding may have cost, you know, in excess of £150,000 from his point of view. So whether that's it's up for debate, really. It's, you know, the Duchy of Cornwall's money is, from the royals' point of view, private funds, but then, you know, from the man on the street, he might say, well, you know, that's inherited land, and so we should probably have a bit more transparency. But I do think that Prince Charles probably doesn't have to, by law, you know, give over his accounts, and they are fairly transparent. I mean, they've talked about greenhouse emissions that he's, you know, they're obviously very conscious about that had risen this year. But obviously, when you're traveling to all around the world in the Voyager, they did the tour in the Caribbean. They obviously did the tour in Africa as well. That was obviously going to go up. It was. I would have hoped that we would have a bit more breakdown, but unfortunately not.
Okey-doke. And then just one really quick thing to look at before we go. Meghan, by the looks of it, has redesigned her engagement ring.
Yeah.
Pictures of it, I assume you guys have both seen it. Obviously, when the ring was designed by Harry, and it was the three beautiful diamonds on a kind of quite a plain gold band, but that's now been changed to a much more glamorous, glitzy version, hasn't it?
With more lots diamonds.
More diamonds, of course, just because those three huge rocks clearly weren't quite enough.
No, more diamonds really to set off the diamonds.
Yes. But this has caused quite a big debate, especially on social media, of lots of people saying that she should be able to do whatever she wants with it. But other people are kind of saying both that it's, you know, it's a piece of, you know, it's now a royal engagement ring. It's kind of a historical piece, but also that it's something that her husband went out and spent loads of time designing, you know, and to kind of change that is a bit. I'd love to know what you guys think about it.
Well, I think she's got to wear this ring.
Yeah, I don't know, right? So my personal view as a man who has given an engagement ring, regardless of who it is, right? Yeah. I think if it was anything but the setting, then I think I would be a bit hurt. And that's my personal view, especially if my fiance wanted to bling it up. And that's obviously what's happened. So you can probably explain to me. So this, the Eternity Ring is different to the new band, right?
Yes.
So the Eternity Ring, which was described as a push present, which I thought was quite vulgar, to be honest. But so the Eternity Ring is obviously because of the, you know, the baby. And that I thought that was really, really sweet. But It's just my personal view that if someone wanted to change the look of it, and I remember when they had the engagement interview, and he was obviously speaking about the stones from Botswana, yes. And
it had a lot of meaning behind it.
It did, and he said, "Oh, it's in her favourite gold. The band is in her favourite gold, and I knew she'd love it." And then she's completely changed it, and I thought. Maybe she should have changed it before or just straight after and said, oh, it didn't fit. And
I think it is a bit strange. Also, she is a woman that has access to lots of very, very fabulous jewellery. That's not the only piece that she now has to wear for the rest of her life. So she can experiment and have access to lots of other things.
Yeah.
Maybe she could have left that one alone.
It's a woman's prerogative. It's just my personal opinion of from a bloke's point of view that if I had invested the time and the effort that Harry... obviously did have, and then...
He just didn't get it right, did he?
No, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
The new design, yeah, because lots of her jewellery, when she's not kind of wearing other pieces, she does wear, it is all quite, she wears lots of kind of very thin rings and very subtle and quite elegant pieces. So I guess the new band is a lot thinner. So I think it is more in kind of fitting with her normal taste by what she tends to wear.
Maybe it just felt too heavy. Sometimes if you have quite small and slim fingers and you have a very heavy ring, it does kind of move around all the time. So maybe she just needed it to be different to fit for her. I mean, there may be a very different reason behind it. We don't know.
Yes. Cool. Right. Well, is there anything exciting coming up this week?
No, nothing really. It's coming up this week. I was with the Duchess of Cambridge yesterday, which was fantastic.
Oh, of course, yeah, for the photography event.
Yeah, which was cool. So she's taken on a new patronage of the Royal Photographic Society, and she was at another one of her patronages, a charity called Action for Children, which is a really fantastic charity that looks after various kids with disabilities, and some of them on a residential level. And obviously she's very, very passionate about her photography. We've seen some really cool images of the kids that she's taken in the recent years. We've had a bit of a critique from some of our photographers that are saying that she's getting much, much better.
Lots of lovely pictures from that event though, with her talking to children.
Yeah, she's great of a kid. Mm. She's fantastic. I thought that she would have... There was a bit of disappointment because I thought that she would have got more involved with the photography element of it. However, it's a bit difficult when you're only turning up for an hour on an engagement. But basically, these kids had been given, 10 of them had been given digital cameras from the Royal Photographic Society to go and sort of explore their surroundings. And then she came in and sort of did a little photography workshop. And she knows what she's talking about. It's obviously one of her, her passions.
She looked great. She had a kind of look quite boho for her, I thought. She was very relaxed. Kind of long, floaty, green paisley print dress by Ridley London. Then she had her her favourite wedges on that she wears a lot at the moment.
Good knowledge. Because they said it was a casual day, so they wouldn't tell us the outfit details. So you heard it here first. Right here.
Oh, well, that's exciting. I really hope we get a new kind of Kate photo to kind of mark this new event. I think that would be really lovely. Mm. But yeah, right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Until next time.
Pod save the Queen!